Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, October 2nd, 2015. And this says, before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV, happy Friday, everybody. We did make it. And I got to tell you, this was just such a rough week. Another rough week for me. It seems like they get harder and harder. I am debating. The kids actually have a four-day weekend coming up. Not this weekend, but starting next Friday, so I might be taking a week off just to chill and take the days off that she has off and take myself a couple days where I can sleep in. So, it is 49 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. It absolutely doesn't feel like 49, but I guess I opened the door and it sure looks like 49. Winter is nipping at our heels up here. Hopefully, though, it'll hold off until December is what I'm thinking. I'm not ready for snow. All right, so where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, if I can get there, Wearable Computing, Photons, Wavelengths, and the Internet of Things. And, yeah, it was a pretty interesting show. It's kind of off the cuff. I've had all these projects I've been working on. And, you know, it's all these technology projects with the radio network. So, obviously, I've been spending my time with my head wrapped in technology and trying to figure out how to do things. So, that's kind of where my head has been set all week. But we did talk about some fun things. We talked about the movement in the future from electrons to photons and being able to hold your information orb and pass information back and forth. We also looked at I talked about the smart Mr. Coffee. I thought about that after the show. You know, just because you can use your smartphone and tell something to turn on isn't a reason to run out. And I said it was $118. I looked again. It's $149 for Mr. Coffee that you can tell to turn on from your bed with your smartphone. Okay, like I said, if you don't have water and you don't have coffee in it, it's not going to work anyway. It was pretty funny, though. And that coffee maker will become part of the Internet of Things, and that's why we brought that up. It's going to be everything. It's going to be your underwear at some point. We started with wearable computing and Android Wear, the new operating system. We were looking at that new LG watch that the watch itself is a cell phone. It doesn't need to interface with your cell phone now to make calls. But that whole new operating system is built specifically for them to put into wearable computing. And trust me, they are working on cloth that they are able to weave. And I don't know if one of the nanomaterials, I'm not sure which one, but they've turned it into a thread and they're able to weave it, and they're really literally going to weave computing into clothing. So put in a seatbelt for that, because that is definitely coming. Where I wanted to start today, though, we ended the show, I read like the first two or three sentences of a story about harvesting electricity out of the airwaves. And when I was reading it, I had postulated that we would be able to do our cell phones that way. And I know I've read stuff. I mean, I even have this little super fast charger thing that somehow does charging that way for my cell phone. But this was for Internet of Things devices. So they have literally found a way to suck electricity out of the air, very Tesla-esque, but this is from already existing different electrical EMF type frequencies. Sorry, guys, it's early. You know what I'm talking about? You know, wireless, cell phone, any of these waves that are already floating around. They just suck them out from there. So let's read the story. Don't listen to me. All right, radio frequency harvesting tech unveiled in the UK. an energy harvesting technology that its developers say will be able to turn ambient radio frequency waves into usable electricity to charge low power devices was unveiled in London on Wednesday. So I wonder too if it, I mean, I think so. I wonder if it can use little radio waves like AM, FM. I mean, remember, even wireless are waves just like that. They're all just at different frequencies. Former British science minister Lord Paul Drayson launched quote-unquote Free Volt, FreeVolt, if anyone wants to read about it, in a theater at the Royal Institution where electromagnetism pioneer Michael Faraday, holy crap, delivered his lectures in the mid-19th century. Oh, I thought Faraday was still alive. Guys, I am going on so few hours sleep right now. You don't even know. Okay. Drayson demonstrated the energy created by the signals for mobile phones being used by attendees. Okay, Drayson demonstrated the energy created by the signals from mobile phones being used by attendees at the presentation before utilizing it to power a loudspeaker in the lecture hall. So he literally was using the Wi-Fi connection that the mobile phones were using, it sounds like, or the 3 or 4G that it was sucking in to power his loudspeakers. The FreeVolt technology has a multi-band antenna and rectifier, a type of battery that converts alternating current to DC current, and is capable of absorbing energy from multiple radio frequency bands, as developers Drayson Technologies and Imperial College London said in a statement. Companies have been researching how to harvest energy from Wi-Fi, cellular, and broadcast networks for many years, said Drayson. But it is difficult because there is only a small amount of energy to harvest. John Batchelor, professor of antenna technology at the University of Kent, said, "This idea is not too far-fetched, and I'm sure it will be improved. The problem with this technology is that available energy can go up or down, and this will happen with radio frequencies," he added. And Batchelor also questioned whether the use of the technology might impact mobile phone signals. So if you had devices out there that were like literally sucking the signal, that's an interesting thought. Is it going to deteriorate then that signal in and of itself? Though he said that the low level of harvesting used by FreeVolt made this unlikely, and especially if they did some sort of reservoir. So they did trickle charging, right? Everybody's trickle charged a battery before. They do trickle charging, and then they have a little reservoir for these where you can have your overflow. I don't know. I'm sure that they'll be able to make something like this work. This is a pretty interesting idea. It says, if you harvested too much energy from radio waves, that would be theft. But what they are talking about is a bit like dropping a sponge into the sea, and it would have little knock-on effect. So that didn't have too much exciting information in it. But what I thought was neat is that in the picture for the story, they have a little smart smoke alarm, a little smart motion IP camera. I don't know what this little beacon thing is, but it could be anything. This could be something that tells location. And then they had one of those exercise smartwatch things in there. Wearable computing. So, you know, this is going to allow us to be completely untethered, to not have to worry about charging batteries, and it will allow wearable computing and this whole internet of things to sneak into our lives and become ubiquitous without us even knowing. You know, so for every technology where you go, whoo, there's always a downside. All right, what did I want to talk about next? Well, staying on the theme of electricity, this is one I saw yesterday that I was like, wow, I don't even know if I totally understand what's going on here. But it says, world's first optical Rectenna, and this is with little quotation marks around it, R-E-C-T-E-N-N-A, and I think they're making kind of fun, like an antenna with something else. The world's first optical rectenna converts light directly into a DC current. So we now have radio frequencies that could be converted to DC, and we have light that can be converted to DC. Now, I told you guys yesterday when we started looking at photons and moving down the road to quantum computing and how now they can even store information in light. Things are moving pretty quickly, and I still say that they are full of shit in the media every time we start looking at any of this technology. And I mean, today we're not looking at AI and killer robots, but tomorrow we probably will be. But I mean, this is just as insane, converting light to DC, converting waves to DC. I mean, I'm sure that's all been a part of physics forever and ever, but we've never been able to do it. But I mean, science fiction is now. Don't let them tell you that it isn't far along as you think it is, because it is. All right, let's read this story. Scientists in the U.S. have assembled the first ever optical rectenna, a device that's part antenna, part rectifier diode, and uses the functions of both to convert light into a direct electrical current. The device uses an array of carbon nanotubes that functions like tiny antennas to capture light. And from this, it generates an oscillating charge that travels through the rectifier and then switches on and converts the alternating current into the direct current. I mean, this could be like a solar panel without any of the bullshit in between. This is pretty awesome. It's taken scientists more than 40 years to get light working in this way, and the invention could lead to new technologies for converting heat waste into electricity and more efficiently capturing solar energy without the need for cooling. A rectenna is basically an antenna coupled to a diode. But when you move into the optical spectrum, that usually means a nanoscale antenna coupled to a metal insulated metal diode, one of the team Barutud Kola from the Georgia Institute of Technology said in a press release. The closer you can get the antenna to the diode, the more efficient it is. So the ideal structure uses the antenna as one of the metals in the diode, which is the structure we made. And as the team explains, the process for making the optical rectenna is actually pretty simple, although it did take them over 1,000 iterations of the device to get it right. You need any type of conductive substrate, and on top of this, you need to grow vertically aligned forests, quote unquote, of microscopic carbon nanotubes in a carpet-like arrangement. And these nanotubes are then coated in aluminum oxide, electrical insulator, and several optically transparent thin layers of calcium and aluminum are placed on top to act as the anode. This metal insulator metal diode structure is the fastest diode in the world, capable of switching on and off at record peta, P-E-T-A, yes, goes above tetra, petahertz. That is 1 quadrillion times per second, or 1 million times faster than gigahertz, if you can even believe that. This forces the electrons generated by the antenna to flow in one direction into the top electrode to create a small direct current. This is the only diode that is fast enough to open and close the gate at the speed of solar energy oscillating in an antenna, says Kola. And because optical rectennas are built from such minuscule components, you'll need an array of them to produce a significant current. And right now, the efficiency of such a device sits just below 1%. Wah, 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 wah. Well, this is just the beginning, though. It's the very first, but still 1%. That's kind of sad. This means that very little light actually hits the device and gets converted into electricity. Well, they'll need to use a prism or something, like I was saying yesterday, where they, some of those new technologies they were working on already for solar, where they split the light out into its component wavelengths and then suck energy from all those different wavelengths. If they did something like that and then beamed it down in like 8 different wavelengths, that might boost it up to 8%. I don't know. I'm just postulating, but 1% is pretty sad. The team's next big challenge is to, yes, figure out how to get it higher than 1%. The team's next big challenge is figuring out how to increase this. But they say that they are confident that they can get this percentage to at least 40% and hope to achieve commercial potential within a year. We could ultimately make solar cells that are twice as efficient at a cost that is 10 times lower. And that, to me, is an opportunity to change the world in a very big way. As a robust high-temperature detector, the Rectennas could be a completely disruptive technology. And just like every technology we talk about is, I mean, like I said, they say 20 years from now, I say 10. 10 years from now, we're not even going to recognize the world that we live in anymore. Too many disruptive technologies going on. It's like, no, don't get me started. I'll go off on a tangent. Okay. As a robust high temperature detector, these Rectennas could be completely disruptive technology if we can get to 1% efficiency. If we can get to higher efficiencies, we could then apply it to energy conversion technologies and solar capture. And these results have been published in Nature Nanotechnology. You know, I think that might be one. I need to find their Facebook page. They come up quite a bit. And I have not subscribed to them, and I don't even know if Nature, I mean, it's a science publication. I don't know if Nature Nanotechnology has a Facebook page. Most of them don't, but they should. They should, because people could subscribe and then just have it feed through the feed. Or do they even have an RSS? I don't see that either. I'm out here looking at their study. I might need to approach some of these scientific journal companies. That doesn't seem right. I mean, even if you don't give the stuff away for free, which most of them don't, they charge, you either have to have a subscription or they charge per article. Why would they not feed all their new studies out into some feed that people can subscribe to? They get like the first paragraph or whatever, and then they're going to want more. So it would help you boost your subscribership, I would imagine, right? I hate that. When, especially, and there's a couple of my science mags that do that. I hate that when you see like a title and you're like, oh, this is exactly what I was looking for. And you go in and it pops up and it's like, you need to pay $14.99 a month to be able to read this information. The future of the internet. Yes. All right. So, because we seem to have been on electricity here for a day or two, amazing. I found this story yesterday right after we got on air, and I was like, wow, this is like one of the freakiest things I've seen yet. Researchers have just made batteries from mushrooms. Yes, they have made batteries from mushrooms, and it says they are surprisingly good. Says, okay, we weren't expecting that. No, we weren't, were we? And they look like some pretty tasty mushrooms that you would like to stuff with whatever your favorite topping was. Yum, yum, yum. Researchers in the U.S. Again, I am almost going to bet you, too, if we, like, followed the money, there's all this tech money. You know, we're so broke, and we don't have benefits, or there's no Social Security, or, oh, my God, people are dying because we can't fund this, that, or the other thing. We're getting ready to go into shutdown. Gonna play chicken again. Yet we have bazillions of dollars to sprinkle all over these universities and these war companies that want to go build weapons of mass destruction to give to everybody for innovation. But we don't have money to build bombs, but we don't have money to support any of our infrastructure, fix things that are broken, take care of our own people. It's just unbelievable. And I mean, yes, I think it's cool that we made batteries out of mushrooms. But on the other hand, I don't know, let's see. Researchers in the U.S. have created a new type of, oh my God, and it's even lithium ion, a new type of lithium ion battery that uses portobello mushrooms. Oh, there's going to be a portobello shortage. Yes, you read that right. Instead of graphite that currently forms the batteries inside of our mobile phones, we're going to have mushroom batteries. All right, we need to understand this. And while it sounds like the type of idea you might hear at a high school science fair, evidence suggests that these new batteries might actually last longer than traditional batteries and could even give our phones better battery life as they age. Yeah, we all gotta hate that. I've actually had to buy a few different batteries now, even for my my Android. And I think it all is the way that you charge. You know, I tend to leave mine plugged in and walk away during the day, and that's not supposed to be too good for your phone to leave it plugged in. So, and that's not all. The mushroom batteries were also incredibly cheap, easy to make, and best of all, they're pretty much biodegradable. They forgot to mention that they're edible, too. I don't know if I'd be eating my portobello mushroom battery, but and what would happen if you took nibbles out of the side? Would you go from 6 hours of charge time to five? But it's good for an emergency. Oh, my God. Which will make a difference to the environment as our demand for batteries skyrockets, with 6 million electric vehicles predicted to be built by 2020. So what, we're going to power electric vehicles too with mushroom batteries? Talk about reality being stranger than fiction. Like, this is crazy. All right, there's more. There's more, and there's pictures even. So now we know what you're thinking. How the hell do you make a battery out of a mushroom? And why? Well, it's actually not as weird as it sounds. In a normal lithium-ion battery, you have a positive and a negative electrode, also known as the anode and the cathode. These electrodes move the charged lithium atoms back and forth, either releasing or storing energy depending on the direction. Traditional anodes are made from synthetic graphite, which works well enough, but it is expensive to make and it has to be treated with harsh chemicals, including hydrofluoric and sulfuric acids, a process that produces a whole lot of hazardous waste. Wow, that sucks, man. I didn't know about that. So all these devices with lithium-ion batteries, I mean, that's pretty much what you got in your notebooks now, too. You got them in your cell phones. They don't make the nickel metal or the NiCad batteries much anymore. I mean, they still do for some low-end devices, but they have that memory issue, you know, when you don't discharge it all the way and you plug it in and then it only charges half. So they're not real popular anymore. Most everything is lithium-ion. So I bet they're making those in China. Hydrofluoric and sulfuric acids everywhere. So researchers have become interested in replacing the synthetic graphite with something cheaper and more environmentally friendly. And a team at the University of California, Riverside, decided that mushrooms might be a good alternative because they are incredibly porous. All right, I get it now. I was like, okay, so they just like out of the bag. It could have been almonds, potatoes. No, we choose mushrooms. And that means that they have a lot more space for lithium ions to move into and therefore a lot more potential to store and transfer energy. You know, this is kind of scary, and I'm going to tell you why. My little brain's going, you can hear it, can't you, the hamster? I WD-40'd the hamster wheel, so it's not squeaking anymore, but you can still hear the ticks. my brain is going, and what's scary about this is that they are combining. I mean, these three stories we just looked at, we're all like, what? One, we're harvesting radio waves, which, I mean, they've been around us for 50, 60, how long have we been using radio? I have no idea, even. 100 years, let's say. Not that long, but maybe. I mean, it's already 2015, so by 1915, I don't think we had real radio, but we were doing things such as, they probably had, like, military stuff, right? Or CBs. I don't know, honestly. I do not know my radio history. But all right, let's say at least 50 years we've had radio and the waves have been floating all around us. I mean, radio waves are a very basic form of physics being utilized in the atmosphere. We also have them harvesting, attempting to harvest electricity out of light. Well, how much more elemental can we be, right? And we've talked about how this newfangled technology, what they're doing is they're usurping our natural world, right? They're trying to copy things that are being done in nature, let's say, and usurp it. So we got them sucking radio waves, we got them sucking light, and now we have them taking a biological organism, and it may not be a mammal, but it's still a living organism, a mushroom. And they are making like this transhumanist mushroom, right? I mean, they're combining it with lithium ion and turning it into a power device that's going to power electronics. You know, here's the one thing that I was thinking about too, like mushrooms. I read a story and I've seen now a couple updates to the story. The largest communication network in the world doesn't happen to be a human one. It happens to be on the forest floor with the fungi. And the fungi have this whole communication system that happens around the entire world. And I bet at some point we really are going to find out that plants, and I mean, I totally believe this already. I mean, life is life. And they might be on different levels, but it doesn't exclude all life from having some sort of sentience and ability to interact with its environment. And so the fact that we're looking at now taking a biological organism and integrating it with technology to then use it to power our electronic devices is definitely disturbing to me. I mean, it's kind of like taking that cockroach or that moth and putting those nanowires in it and using a joystick to remote control it. I mean, nobody wants to snuggle up with a cockroach or a big nasty looking moth at night, but I'll tell you what, it's still a living creature. It's still a living creature that is being manipulated and used for experimentation, and then who the hell knows what? And they're like, oh yeah, these remote control roaches will save people someday in a disaster. Maybe the roach doesn't want to be the super saver roach. You know what I mean? Like, this just isn't fair. We've already gone above and beyond just looking at the meat industry, how, you know, these poor animals are just bred for food and slaughtered and held captive and all these horrible things done to them. I mean, I don't even like to think about that. I am not at all proud to be part of humanity when I think about any of that. And if I could go, and I, careful what you ask for, because we're going to talk about this, what I was going to say. If I could go without eating meat, I would. Since I was a little kid, I remember asking my mother, where does hamburger come from? Because I would not eat any meat because I knew the chicken came from a chicken and steak came from a cow, but hamburger, there are no animals called hamburger. So I was okay with hamburger at like 5. Yeah. The joke was on me. I remember my mother making me tell her friends that story like a couple different times. that there was no animal called hamburger, and they all would laugh. And of course, I didn't get it because I was five. But, you know, it just really is depressing. And just hold on, because we're going to get back to the theme from 2 days ago, which happened to be everything was about climate change. There's a video that came out the other day that was like, uh-oh, bug protein and test tube beef, here they come. All right, let's get back to this. It says, so researchers have become interested in replacing the synthetic graphite with something cheaper and more environmentally friendly. And a team at the University of California, Riverside, decided that mushrooms might be a good alternative because they are incredibly porous. And that means that they have a lot more space for lithium ions to move into and assimilate. And therefore, a lot more potential to store and transfer energy. Mushrooms also happen to have high potassium salt concentration. That's interesting. Which means that over time, even more pores open up in the material, gradually increasing the battery's capacity the more that it is used. Now, that is really kind of cool. So the more you use it, the longer it lasts, like you're exercising the battery. With battery materials like this, future cell phones may see an increase in runtime after many uses rather than a decrease due to the apparent activation of blind pores within the carbon architecture as the cell changes and discharges over time. One of the research team, Brennan Campbell, said in a press release. And so far, the battery is still in its infancy. And even though the team has shown that the batteries are able to get more porous and store more energy the more they are used, they are nowhere near as efficient as traditional lithium-ion batteries just yet. The next step will be to optimize the system and find out whether it really could be a contender for the battery of the future. But the team has already filed for patents for their invention, which they have detailed in scientific reports. Despite our skepticism, the results are pretty promising, and we suppose that if the team can find a way to make cheaper batteries, longer lasting, and more environmentally friendly, then we can find a way to stop laughing every time we say the word mushroom battery. Oh, they think they're being funny. So, I don't know. I wanted to share that because I thought it was pretty cool. But again, it is disturbing as well, as we are hijacking biology to make it a part of the machine. There was also, and I don't know, do we even care about this? There's this thing about this flexible battery they're working on for wearable clothing as well. But you know what? At some point in the future, especially if they're going to suck it out of the air, I don't think they're going to have to worry about that too much. Well, let's see what it says. This is an origami-style battery that could double the life of wearable gadgets. The battery you can fold up and put, well, pretty much anywhere. If you own a smartwatch or indeed a smartphone, then you will know that the battery performance on modern gadgets isn't quite what it could be. The innovation here isn't so much the material used in the battery. It is the same lithium-ion compound that makes up the smartphone batteries of today, but the way in which it is put together. Based on an origami and kurigami, where the paper is cut as well as folded, this new battery style can be extended and retracted like a car antenna, even while it's powering a device. That means that the stretchable battery can go places where normal batteries can't go, like the band of your smartwatch or inside a very thin section of a robot. The batteries that the researchers have created can stretch and expand to more than 150% of their compacted size, and that is a big deal in an industry where electronics are becoming versatile and more wearable, yes. As there are so many advantages to this kind of flexibility, scientists have spent many years trying to work on batteries that can be folded in this way, but packs created from previous attempts at the technology would often break or tear when folded. And the batteries produced by the team from the U.S. and China, are we working together on this? Overcome this problem by placing carefully calculated soft creases at various points along the battery's body. The inventors say that these batteries could double the life of a smartwatch between charges, for example, by being fitted into the band. And what's more, the manufacturing process is reasonably straightforward. It says there is a trade-off, though. The shape of these batteries may mean that they can't hold as much of a charge as compared to rectangular ones. All right. So, well, so now we got special batteries coming for wearable technologies as well. Oh, yeah, we're going to look at a couple things here. I got two more stories I want to do. And one, we're going to talk about. Hold on, I got to connect myself here. Hopefully there's nothing playing in the background. I have no idea. I have so many things open, so many places. In the middle of so many projects that I just, oh, there's speakers on there. I have no idea what I have going on here. Maybe my Skype will work. Maybe it won't. Hey, there we go. All right. So we were talking about, I mentioned how if I didn't have to eat beef or meat in particular, I wouldn't. Not because I don't enjoy it, but I just don't get off on the fact that they're killing some poor little fuzzy animal with cute little eyes that could be my buddy and my friend for me to eat. And they're raising them in deplorable conditions in many cases. And I know, I mean, I'm talking factory farming, but it's happening across the world. And so, you know, let's put this into context is where this propaganda just came from. So we just had the Pope here talking about climate change. And, you know, this has been the mantra now for the last year or two. I saw right after the Pope left, too. Whose ass did they cart out? Take a guess. Yeah, good old Al Gore. They put him on the dolly and wheeled him out onto the stage. They didn't really, but they probably should have. And, you know, he had to come out. Should we do Man Bear Pig? Hold on. We got to find Al Gore's thing. I don't want to lose this, so... Hold the phone, por favor. We'll see if I can find it. We'll do Jeopardy music. Wait, let's disconnect Skype for a second. I hate that background squishy noise. All right. Oh, boy. You know, here's something else, too. I don't know if anybody else has gotten the slow disease that my computers all seem to have. And I noticed last night that every hour on the hour, well, not on the hour, but at 19 minutes after the hour, for about 5 straight hours in a row, every hour at 19 after, my Chrome browser went into, like, super freeze mode. And it went into not responding. You couldn't click on anything. And it wasn't just Chrome then. It was like my whole machine. Went on for about 2 minutes. And then everything was fine again. I really think that they're doing like mass data dump downloads. And I bet you that is, you know, they're probably sucking browser history or something. Once an hour. You fucking terrorist. We're going to get you. You know, it makes me so angry. You don't even know. And it's on all my machines now. It's doing that. I mean, that's a brand new one out of the blue. On the hour. Well, on whatever. On the minute. Every hour. Which means that there's a process running. I mean, that's what typically, when you start finding something that happens at a predictable time, it means there's a service running somewhere. There's a service running that seems to be sucking all my bandwidth like an orange through a straw that only goes on for a couple minutes, and then it's over, and then everything's back normal. But I'm not supposed to notice that, I guess. Anyway, all right. So here's the Al Gore story. So as Pope leaves America and calling on everyone to give up for the good of all.
I hate that. All right, here. Let's listen to this.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Thank you. Thank you, Don. Thank you very much. Thank you. We are winning. Just a forced smile. The whole deal.
Wow, this blows bigger than anything. You know what? Fuck this. I can't even play. What's so aggravating is we've been doing all this video testing and stuff. And the test I did like 2 weeks ago, I had my camera at 1080p and it was crystal clear and everything was great. And whatever this new disease is that I seem to have on all my machines has sucked all my bandwidth dry. I can't even play a video on my desktop. I can't stream audio. I can't even get the network to stream. I got to listen to it on my phone. I can't play a video. I can't. When anyone who was watching the test I was doing a couple days ago with my camera here now, I had it at 360, the lowest resolution you possibly could get with no audio going over. And it was like every 10 seconds you'd see my hand move. This is just so amazingly frustrating. I think I'm going to warn you guys. There's going to be a time I think I'm taking this all down. I am ripping out every cable in this office. I got to get a tape measure and just measure if we got 10, 15, or 20 feet here. And I'm going to buy like 15 cables. I am going to bump up my internet. And I am going to tell them to go stick it. Because I can't even work this way. I mean, I am literally moving around between three different rooms and four different computers just to get a project done. I mean, this is unsustainable. But I can't even play you a video, damn it. And this pisses me off because it's Friday. It was a rough week and I wanted to play Man Bear Pig. Oh, here, well, damn it. And on the other machine, the one that normally I might be able to coerce Skype to work on, Chrome doesn't open. Just stopped opening yesterday for some reason. So I guess we say screw it. All right, let's go on to other stories that I had queued up here. So screw them trying to make us give up beef because it has too big of a carbon footprint, because I had a video that talked about that too. Screw Al Gore, because who gives a shit? I can't stand that guy. Let's get to the worms that are going to solve the global pollution crisis. Yes, hail to the worm. Plastic-eating worms might be the solution to the global crisis. Yes, plastic-eating worms. New research could have staggering implications for plastic waste pollution. An international team of researchers found that the darkling beetle larvae, the mealworm, can subsist on a diet of styrofoam and other forms of polystyrene. Holy crap! And do they end up with worm cancer? How can something live on styrofoam? And I mean, you know, styrofoam, there's no way to recycle either. You can't put that. I always would hate when I'd order something and they would just load the box with those styrofoam peanuts. So you can't do anything with them. You know, then they made those sugar peanuts that kind of dissolved in water and they were better. But I'm sure there were probably chemicals in there that you didn't want to leach into things. It says in an ongoing worm study, Stanford engineers collaborated with researchers at the University of China. Man, I've seen a lot of U.S.-Chinese collaboration, and that scares me a little. Not that we want to be enemies with China, but remember, China has had a population problem for more than a generation where they said that you could only have one kid, right? And so everybody got rid of the females and just had sons so they could spread their name. And they ended up with this whole generation of people that had no spouses. And now they changed that because they're like, oh, that was kind of dumb. And they're allowing parents to have two children. But they also, because of that fact, went way far ahead. They never banned stem cell research way back when in the 80s. And they have been working on in vitro and gene splicing mad science, gone mad for a long time in the laboratory. So it scares me that we're going to be friendly with China on all this crazy research. So anyway, in an ongoing worm study, Stanford engineers collaborated with researchers from the University of China and found that microorganisms in the guts of common mealyworms, and that's what you would feed like your lizard, biodegrade styrofoam. The process produces carbon dioxide and a usable waste that what? Oh, yes, appears to be safe for crop use. What? Let's take mealyworm styrofoam shit and put it on our crops as a fertilizer. Wow. And you know what? It produces carbon dioxide. Well, I think Man Bear Pig's going to have something to say about that. And Mr. Billy Gates, in the lab, 100 mealyworms ate between 34 and 39 milligrams, which is the weight of a small pill, of styrofoam per day. And the worms converted the plastic into carbon dioxide. And within 24 hours, they took a poop. And it came out as biodegradable fragments that looked like bunny poops. Oh, why did they have to even tell us that? I really didn't want to know what mealyworm excrement looks like. Styrofoam has long been considered non-biodegradable, and this new result has been described as shocking. Again, let's utilize these living creatures to fix our screw-ups, and we'll poison them as well. How could they possibly be eating styrofoam? I think even if they could digest it, I can't imagine that that's going to be good for the mealyworms. And then they add insult to injury. They're going to use the styrofoam mealyworm poop to put on crops. I'm not down for that at all. It says, our findings have opened a new door to solve the global plastic pollution problem, says Wee Min Woo, co-author of the two companion studies on the subject and a senior research engineer at Stanford University. Wu said that the mealyworms, despite being fed a steady diet of plastic, were as healthy as those on a normal diet. Why? How is that even possible? Let's feed these worms styrofoam and then go, oh, look, they're just as healthy as mealyworms that are eating plants. And Wu said that their waste appeared to be safe to use as soil for crops. The latest findings build on earlier research with waxworms, the larvae of India meal moths, whose internal microorganisms can also biodegrade polyethylene, a plastic film used in trash bags. So all they need to do then is just take bazillions of these mealyworms and just dump them in the dumps, bury them. I wonder if they can live underground. Bury them when they bring in the bulldozer to plow under a new garbage hole. And they just dump the mealyworms all over it and hope that they will biodegrade all the crap in 100,000 years under the ground. This research is, quote, the first to provide detailed evidence of bacterial degradation of plastic in an animal's gut. Further work is needed to reveal how bacteria within the mealworms carry out this feat, which could potentially provide new opportunities for the safe management of plastic waste. They should go put a whole bunch of these worms out on that plastic garbage patch in the ocean and see what they do. The two papers were published this month in the Environmental Science and Technology paper, and it says that there's a possibility of really important research coming out of bizarre places. Yeah, bizarre places such as electrical mushrooms, says Craig Criddle, the professor of civil and environmental engineering who supervises Wu and others out of Stanford. Sometimes science surprises us, and this is really a shock. Researchers plan to study whether microorganisms within the mealyworms and other insects can biodegrade plastics such as polypropylene, which is used in textile products and automotive components, microbeads, which are used as exfoliants, and just know any products that you're using that say they have microbeads in them. I don't know if you saw that story way back, but they're finding them all over in our water supplies. They don't biodegrade. So these little microbeads, they're like little plastic beads, are all over the floor of our lakes and our rivers. And I don't know if they found them in the ocean or not. I would assume, especially in California, I'm sure all kinds of microbeads are being used with, you know, Californians. It's really disturbing. I mean, why would you be a company and put all this crap out and then go, oh, hey, guess what? It doesn't biodegrade. As well as bioplastics, which are derived from renewable biomass sources such as corn or biogas methane. The long-term goal is to isolate the bioenzymes used by the microorganism to break down the plastics, which could result in new methods of reducing plastic waste that are already in the environment and create new types of bioplastics that won't accumulate in the land and the sea. Every year, Americans throw away how many? 2.5 billion plastic foam cups. Just cups. Like, what about carry-out containers? Do you ever get something from a restaurant and they give you the styrofoam container and all the packing peanuts? Like I said, a lot of companies are now using little bags filled with air and lots of bubble wrap. But still, there's tons of styrofoam out there. And they haven't ever, they've never been able to recycle it. So every bit of styrofoam that we have ever used as a globe is still floating around out there somewhere. But it says it represents just a fraction of 33 million tons of plastic that is discarded. And that's every year, 33 million tons of plastic. Less than 10% gets recycled. And the remainder has led to water contamination and animal poisoning. So, I don't know. All hail the mealyworms. Actually, that would be pretty great if they could find a way to biodegrade styrofoam. That's always bothered me. I hate using styrofoam for that reason in particular. All right, I got a couple other stories out of here. I think I'll share this one just because this is a big F you to the establishment. The doctor is out. LabCorp to let consumers order their own tests. I was like, huh? I'll check this out. Consumers will soon be able to bypass their doctors by going online to order cholesterol readings, thyroid tests, and other blood work from the biggest diagnostic company in the U.S. Ho-ho! Laboratory Corp of America Holdings will let customers go online to pay for tests, visit a service center to get blood drawn, and then view the results on the web. And the company has already been doing back-office lab work for a number of internet firms that let people order up tests without a doctor. And why this really surprised me is with this whole precision medicine initiative and this electronic health records merging with the genomics databases that they have, that whole eMERGE project, the fact that they wouldn't slap some sort of regulatory fines or quick draw pass a law saying that pharmaceutical companies or phlebotomy, you know, I mean, this is a diagnostic company, requires some sort of prescription from your doctor, because, I mean, this could wreak havoc. You could say, screw you, doctor. I don't want to go in to see you for my physical and have you order blood tests and then have me come back and you lecture me on my cholesterol level for a half hour. People don't like that. And doctors do that, you know, and then treat you like you're an idiot and that you don't know that maybe you're not eating healthy or whatever. And by the way, we found out cholesterol's healthy anyway. So all that Lipitor that they've been giving people has just been doing liver damage for no reason whatsoever. This says rapid and at-home diagnostics are a growing corner of the healthcare market, and with businesses like WellFX Inc. and Direct Laboratory Services LLC tapping into demand from patients who want to get sensitive results in private or seek to monitor their health outside of their traditional doctor's office. Whoa, what a concept. For those of us who don't want to be a part of the machine. Companies like LabCorp are tapping into demand from consumers who want to measure their bodies to monitor the effects of exercise and healthy living and to learn about the potential risks of disease. Quote, we need to retake that territory for ourselves, says LabCorp Chief Executive Officer David King in a telephone interview. It's a growth opportunity and it's something consumers increasingly want to have access to, and it is something that we're doing already. And have our capabilities are being utilized without us getting the benefit from a branding perspective. LabCorp is also facing competition as options emerge for consumers to get tests without visiting a service center at all. Ho ho, the real story comes out now. They figure they better go quick and go consumer direct before all these self-home test things come out. We read about those with little nano needles. You can do all kinds of stuff. Startup Theranos Inc., founded in 2003, has developed a diagnostic kit available in some Walgreens locations that says it can provide a range of results from lipid panels to the presence of HIV just with mere drops of blood. LabCorp's direct-to-consumer businesses will initially be run online, and the company is exploring a partnership with a drugstore chain. An idea that rival Quest Diagnostics tried and scrapped, and the company didn't say precisely which tests it will offer or how much it will charge. And in some states, the law still requires consumers to go to a doctor to order tests. So there you go. I guess in some states it is a law. But the consumer appetite for health information is growing as devices like Fitbit and Apple Watches offer more sophisticated ways to monitor the body, and companies like 23andMe clash with regulators over interpretations they provide for genetic information. So there you go. If that didn't wrap it up, I don't know what did. All right. We are about out of time. Make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next. Josh is live at 6. We got the boys from Primetime on at 8 with the rebroad from this week. 9, Truth on the Tracks with Brandon. 10, Brand New Reality Bites with Neil Foster, and 11, Levon on Camera with Anti-Media Radio. All right, guys, have an awesome weekend. I'll catch up with you on Monday. Take care.